Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This episode contains adult themes and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, the world. This is They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I'm Sadie Eck.
And I am Courtney Eck.
And it's part two day today.
Yeah. And listen, everybody. Okay. You've got some preparation to do. You need to keep one fist free to pump in the air because there is cause for celebration. And okay. You need to find multiple soft things that you can throw anytime I read anything that this guy said or wrote because hang on. I don't know if I've ever written a more infuriating story, but there's a payoff.
Worse than what he already wrote and said last episode.
It's staggering. This guy's narcissism is next level. And I also want to give a shout out to Jerry Mitchell, who wrote an article titled Gone for the Clarion Ledger. I leaned heavily on this article for last week's episode, but I leaned very heavily on it for this week's episode because this guy also accompanied Annette's mother, Rose, as she went after Felix.
Amazing.
Yes. So I also very highly encourage you to go and read the article because had I included everything he wrote, this would be in 22-parter. And I am not kidding. He went so deep and there was so much I had to leave out, especially toward the end, especially toward the like lesser solved part of this case. Mm-hmm. But bravo, Jerry Mitchell. He also helped get a conviction for a Klan member who did a bombing in the 60s. Yeah. So
hero.
Hip, hip, hooray, Jerry Mitchell. This guy rules the world. So when we left off last week, Felix had just met 20-year-old Sharon Hensley, who was a beautiful young woman who had spent time modeling during her childhood in Bismarck, North Dakota. She was described as someone who cared deeply for her friends and family, was a popular girl who dated members of the football team, and was on the school's award-winning dance team. She was extremely close with her brothers, especially her youngest brother, Brian, and would include him when she and her friends danced to records or went to swim at the local river. She went on to study dance and theater at Bismarck Junior College, and in 1967, she learned she was pregnant, so followed her brother Brian and some friends to San Francisco so she could live in a home for unwed mothers. She was also eager to join in on the summer of love. Quote, she believed in love, Brian recalled. She believed in happiness. She believed in flowers and beads. I believe in flowers and beads, too.
I believe in those things. 100%.
She gave birth to a baby girl that she named Cherry after the Neil Diamond song.
Oh, my God. Cherry?
That's my heart exploding.
What a perfect name.
Honestly. And while she wanted to keep her daughter, she knew she wasn't able to. Oh. She spent 2 years in California before writing home to let her parents know that she'd landed in jail. I'm not sure what for. Summer of love stuff, I'm assuming.
Right. Being adorable.
Being adorable. They're like, ma'am, we're taking you in for far too much beauty and wonder. You're under arrest.
Welcome to my world.
God, just dodging the cops left and right. Yes. Like, it's the wonder being police.
Too cute.
Too much magic. You're far too adorable. Come with us. Put your hands behind your back. Her mother, Peggy, traveled to California with the $5,000 she needed to get her out of prison, which tells me it was probably drug-related charge, so she could bring her home. But when Peggy got home, she announced that she'd, quote, lost her daughter. I'm assuming she meant mentally and emotionally, not physically. Brian said that she fell into a deep depression over the state of her daughter and was, quote, never the same after that. Sharon and Felix's friendship quickly grew into a relationship after they met. And the one thing they had in common was a devotion to the 1928 book, The Grape Cure, by Johanna Brandt, who claimed that fasting and eating grapes had cured her stomach cancer.
Cool. That sounds healthy.
So Felix and Sharon devoted themselves to the diet by filling their bathtub with grapes they collected from the surrounding vineyards and eating them, and only them. Felix's son, Bill, was 8 at the time. You know, it's really good for 8-year-olds' development.
Only grapes?
Yeah, tons, shit tons of sugar. Just nonstop sugar and no protein and no carbohydrates. Yeah. Brains don't need those things.
No.
I guess sugar is a carbohydrate, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no complex carbohydrates.
Yes, they don't need those empty ones. And the three of them hitchhiked around California, camping and living off of the land. Felix had explained Bill's mother's absence by saying, remember, his first wife, Mary, was Bill's mother. Quote, he said he and my mother were out fishing, that a boat had come by and caused a big wave and knocked my mother out of the boat, and that she didn't know how to swim, had on no flotation, and immediately sank and drowned. My father said he almost died trying to rescue her.
Liar.
Liar. Huge, fat liar. But then one day, Bill claims he heard his father talking to Sharon when they didn't know he could hear them. Quote, he told her that he had murdered my mother.
Oh, my God.
I heard the girlfriend saying, oh, I know you just must feel responsible for it. And he said, no, you don't understand. I really did kill her.
Jesus.
I was just so angry with my father, he said. He was actually a good father in many ways, but how do I reconcile what I've just heard?
Yeah.
I couldn't.
No.
Bill said that after that, he started praying to be able to go home to live with his grandparents in Mississippi. And it wasn't until he met a 13-year-old migrant worker that he befriended and confided in that he realized he could do something about his life himself. And Bill had no shirt and no shoes. And he said this kid was just fascinated with him because he didn't have any clothes on.
Oh, my God.
Ever. Quote, the more he heard of my story, he said, why don't you just turn him into the police? He said, when I heard those words, it was like, ding, the light came on.
But really, what kid thinks of that?
I know.
You know, you're
probably
your
a migrant worker. This kid's been through some shit. And he's like, listen, you weird white kid with no clothes on, just go to the police. He told me there was a town about 2 miles away, and I started walking right then.
Wow. He's like, okay, yeah, let's go on a hike.
Now that you mentioned it, see you later. He walked to the nearest town, which terrifying. It's the 70s, you know,
right.
So maps, there's maps, but he doesn't have access to them. There's no GPS.
Well, and he's going to get to the police station and they're going to be like, you're a child. We don't care about you.
Well, Sadie, turns out that's exactly what happened. So he walked the 2 miles to find the police station, which he found. And he told them he was, quote, hungry and tired of using the drugs his father gave him.
Oh, my God.
And that he wanted to go back to school and live like other kids.
No.
And that he had overheard his father admitting to killing his mother.
Oh, my God.
They were like, go
back to your bathtub of grapes.
Well.
Goodbye.
They didn't believe him at first, of course, but he sat on the front steps of the station until he was able to convince a detective to take him seriously.
You're kidding me.
Nope.
Good for him.
Bill rules. Bill rules.
Is the president.
Yes. So once they believed him, they traveled to where Felix and Sharon were living and found a bag of LSD and learned that they were only eating grapes. They were like, wow, kid, it's way worse than you said it was. Felix was arrested and served 6 months and got 3 years probation for LSD possession. LSD possession. That sounds so weird coming out of my mouth.
Right.
Bill got his wish and moved back in with his grandparents. Hooray! You got full custody. Fuck yeah! I'm so proud of Bill.
You got what you needed and deserved.
Bill said that when he saw his father and Sharon pull into his grandparents' house in January of 1971, his immediate thought was, quote, I really thought he was going to kill me.
Oh.
My grandmother came back out and reassured me that he wasn't going to hurt me.
Wow. Poor kid.
Poor kid. Felix had actually come to tell Bill that he didn't blame him for the time he spent in prison and blamed it on Sharon, although she'd had nothing to do with his arrest. The next day, the local sheriff came looking for Felix because police in California had sent a wire that they were looking for him, but his mother covered for him and then snuck him and Sharon to the bus station the next day with enough money for them to get the hell out of town.
Don't do that. Don't cover for your kids who are monsters.
Quote, don't know if it was the right thing to do, she wrote. We definitely feel that they both need psychiatric help, but there seems to be no way that that can be arranged.
Oh, I'm sure we can arrange it.
So God help them and us is our prayer.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do in 1971 with my psychopath son and his sweet hippie girlfriend and their grape diet and their fucking woogie woogie, you know, like I don't know what I would do either. I certainly would hope that I would allow them to face the consequences of their actions and just let the police come and find them and wouldn't put them at the, they ducked down on the baseboards of the car and she drove them out of town to the bus station.
I don't know that I would do that.
But also I would have Bill to worry about. And I think my priority would be keeping my grandson safe. And the thing that the grandson needs is the father to get the fuck out of town. So it sucks. In 1972, Felix and Sharon drove to Sharon's parents' home in Bismarck and showed up unannounced. And they hadn't seen her in years at that point. Hmm. Sharon's family was shocked by her appearance, saying she'd lost tons of weight, had long armpit and leg hair, but was losing clumps of hair from her head, and showed up wearing a miniskirt with no underwear, which, do what you want, ladies, but when you go see mom and dad, put on some britches, put on some drawers.
Maybe, or a little longer skirt.
They explained the hippie life they'd been leading, and Brian said, quote, you could just tell she was not the same person. This guy was controlling what she was saying. If someone asked her a question, either Felix would answer the question for her, or she would look at Felix while she was giving the answer. One afternoon, Brian and Felix went to the Elks Club to work out, and Felix stripped naked and walked around and used the steam room, and which totally freaked out the other guests to the point that he was forced to leave. And if you're listening from the West Coast, you're like, what's the big deal? But if you're listening from the Midwest, you think, I have never seen one strip of naked human flesh in a gymnasium in my life. Because
no,
you won't.
You barely see ankles here.
No. If you go to Planet Fitness, the ladies go into the stalls to change. They don't understand the concept of changing rooms are just one big stall, but God forbid. No, no, no. Which, fine. I mean, in Portland, women like blow dry their hair completely naked and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Have full on conversations with a stranger that just met.
Oh, yeah. On another occasion, Brian went to the store with them and they got caught trying to steal bottles of grape juice, but managed to flee before the cops came. He said the bottles were clanking in her tote, like clang, 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 like. Once they'd worn out their welcome in the Hensley home, they went to Mississippi to stay with Felix's parents and help paint their house. While they were there, they received a lot of criticism from the neighbors who constantly spotted them sunbathing naked in the yard. When their time was up there, Sharon called her mother to report that they were traveling to New Orleans and then on to Miami to shoot some pornographic films. While they were in New Orleans, Sharon worked as a table dancer, just like she had in many of the other cities they'd passed through, and her good looks brought in really good money for the couple. Peggy took this information as a cry for help and desperately wanted to go south to rescue her, but was unable. I'm not sure why. Finances, emotions, I don't know.
Yeah.
Didn't know where she was, I don't know, but I can't imagine knowing that your daughter was just off. Being a sex worker, you know, and not necessarily because she wants to be, and you just don't know where she is or how to access her or to help her.
Or even if you get to her, if she can get out of the controlling and abusive relationship.
Yes. And I should say being trafficked, because I don't think sex work is the appropriate term for what Sharon was doing. I think she was being trafficked by Felix.
Yeah.
Sharon called in 1973 to report they were heading to South America to, quote, eat natural foods and write a book, but they never heard from her again. Peggy finally called Felix's mother when she hadn't heard from Sharon for months. And in March of 74, Felix sent her a letter that said he was still in Florida and had last seen Sharon a year before in Key West when she was hanging out with an Australian couple who wanted her to travel the world with them. He said, quote, "I share your concern about Sharon, but she is of age and she should have the right and freedom from you to decide for herself how she wants to live her time on Earth. You can go fuck yourself and don't tell me about my daughter and keep my daughter's name out of your mouth," is what I would have written back.
Yep.
He claimed she'd burned all of her ID cards and got new ones so she could start fresh with a new identity. How convenient.
Only in the 70s.
Well, and also, wow, how am I ever going to find her if I don't know her new name and new identity, right, and she doesn't have an identity that I'm aware of? Felix's mother wrote to Peggy a year after that to reiterate Felix's claims that Sharon was off traveling the world with an Australian couple named Frank and Sally, but one major issue was that he'd given them different names when he'd written to Peggy in 1974. Also, Frank and Sally.
Of one thing, like, you can keep one detail together.
Yeah.
It should be the couple's name.
Yeah.
Write it down. Jot it down in your memory book.
Just jot it down in your memory book. Jot it down in a real actual book, too.
Yeah.
And then you have a backup to your memory book, which clearly fails because you can never keep the stories of your dead wives and girlfriends straight, dude. Bill also claimed that at one point, Felix had mentioned to him that, quote, "she would never bother anyone again," meaning Sharon.
Right.
The words upset Bill, who believed his father had just confessed to another killing. Quote, "there was not a soul I could tell about it because I had had my experience in court when I was 8. No one would believe me. It would be my word against his, and no one would believe a 13-year-old.
How cool is that, that we can teach our 8-year-old children that it's that quick, like that early on, nobody's going to believe you in the court system.
And also, how cool is it that your father would kill so many women that you can't tell on him because people would be like, yeah, right.
That's crazy. Nobody would do that.
You're 13. It's the 70s. Shut up. And that would never happen. And hilarious. Right. That's so funny, kid. Like, what do you have against your dad? Well, the fact that he's a serial killer, first and foremost. I'm 13. I get to carry that information around and know my dad's just out there killing women.
It's cool.
Awesome. That same year, Felix was on a bus in Mississippi when he met 17-year-old Sharon Campbell after he sat next to her and complimented the way she looked. So she gave him her phone number. He told her all about his travels and adventures, which sounded so nice to the small town girl. And so he asked her to join him. She said she wanted to, but she knew she wouldn't be able to unless they got married. And so they did.
No, they didn't. No, don't do it.
She said they were never able to consummate their marriage because he couldn't perform, and that after their honeymoon, they traveled with her one-year-old son to Oklahoma so Felix could take a job he'd been offered. When they visited Louisiana a few weeks later, one of Felix's nieces told her, quote, "you probably need to know that he killed his first wife."
Oh, my God.
Yeah. She said, yeah, they arrested him. We all believed that he did it. He drowned her out of a boat.
Wow.
Sharon, too, said that after they went to visit Felix's parents, at one point he didn't know she was nearby, and she watched as he opened a compartment. I think it was on his car because he mentioned his car, but it was not entirely clear. But inside of this mystery compartment, she saw, quote, "sinister surgical-looking saws of all shapes and sizes."
No, dude.
"In a neat, neat formation."
Oh, my God.
"They were so clean, like you would see in a surgery clinic. I mean, they were that sterile."
Wow. So I was just assuming that he was just like disappearing people, throwing them off boats, off cliffs.
Me too.
Taking them to the wilderness. Who knows? But like a glove box full of sterile surgical equipment.
Yeah. I know. I was assuming the same thing. And turns out he sucks.
Yeah, no, some pleasure. I mean, I knew that there's a pleasure in a different level than I was expecting.
Yes, same. Yeah. Exact same. The quote continues, "to her, the sight screamed evil."
Yeah.
"It scared me. I said, I'm not going anywhere with you." She said it became more and more clear to her that he hated women and had no value in the female gender whatsoever. So she left him and annulled their marriage. Thank God and Jesus.
Good.
Yes. Yeah, there are a couple near misses, thank God. And I just cannot imagine being these women and being out there and finding out what he did later and being like, holy shit, by the skin of my teeth, my little baby son wouldn't have a mother.
Right.
And I wouldn't have a whole life. In 1977, Felix met a woman named Ella who had traveled from Holland to attend the International Transactional Analysis Association Conference in San Francisco. If that's not the most 70s title for a conference ever.
I have no idea what that means, but sounds cool.
But before she got there, she was traveling all over the United States. Felix joined her for a week and then brought her to the conference on his motorcycle, so he was invited to attend. At the conference, he learned about transactional analysis, quote, which describes parent, adult, and child ego states when people interact with each other. Vail recalled a presentation from a group known as the, quote, frog pond, which believed that people could have their lives transformed just as fairy tales described frogs being transformed into princes or princesses. So basically just ego stuff, which is his favorite topic of conversation. So I think he just got more fuel for his narcissistic frenzy.
Bullshittery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In 1977, he also went to San Diego and reconnected with an ex-girlfriend named Carolyn. And they got married on Christmas Eve of the same year.
How many marriages is this now?
Like 12, I don't know. Yeah, 15, we're in 73rd marriage.
Jesus.
They rented a house in San Bernardino, and she said they had to scrub it from top to bottom.
Mommy, I'm recording.
Oh.
What do you need?
I was going to ask you if you want to play a game with me.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
That's okay. Love you.
Hug.
Yeah, love you. Thank you. Close the door for me.
Bye.
Bye. At least he skipped and hopped and sang his way in here so I didn't get scared to death.
So they rented a house in San Bernardino, and she said they had to scrub it from top to bottom and cover everything in plastic because he said he was allergic to it.
No, I'm allergic to you.
Yeah. The closest he ever came to getting a job was trying to grow weed in the backyard, and she paid for everything with her teacher salary, including his extensive dental work and a Carmen Ghia.
Wait, this is not the first time we've been spending money on his teeth.
His kid's got bad teeth, clearly. I'm sure all those years of eating grapes only didn't help, but yeah. No. Carolyn was very good with money and had managed to save $23,000 that she planned to use to buy a home. And he got furious with her when he found out about it and she wouldn't share any of it with him.
Fuck you.
Also, it's $23,000 in 1977. Like, bad. I mean, granted.
It's like a million.
Yeah. Probably. People could just do that back then. She did pay for him to attend Erhard Seminars training, also known as EST, where he learned techniques to break from his past and then would keep her up all night, manically talking about how he needed to become a trainer, quote, because he was so much more enlightened than them.
What about that? What about investing in your partner's future just so that they can annoy the shit out of you and probably kill you? That sucks.
Be like, hey, you should go to the EST training. It's definitely not cult shit at all. And also just going to fuel more of your narcissism. And then you're just going to keep
finding reasons to abuse me more.
Yep.
Gross.
He also tried to convince her that she needed to, quote, alienate herself from her mother by convincing her that she never loved her.
Well, of course.
She said,
he had to do that.
She said, how stupid was that? How stupid was I? Soon after that, Carolyn learned that Felix had been having multiple affairs. And when she called his mother to talk to her about it, she was like, and? So it was clear to Carolyn that infidelity was her husband's M.O. Yeah. And so she peaced out and had her friends serve him with divorce papers.
Phew.
Phew.
Phew. I'm so glad she just had to get annoyed by him.
Yes, me too.
Abused, probably, and not murdered.
Me too. Phew. Big time. When he received the papers, he drove his car. And the way the article made it sound, it sounded like he drove across their property where her car was. Drove straight into it like a big old fucking baby.
God, what a baby.
Yeah, I'm sure he totaled his Carmen Ghia and totaled her car.
And probably broke his teeth, so he has to go get more teeth work
done. Such a good point. She then moved 100 miles away and never looked back.
Good. And they didn't have kids or anything,
no,
right? No. Okay.
I think it was a very short good affair. Then in 1978, Felix met Alexandra Christensen on a double date while he was still married to Carolyn, I think, I'm assuming. And she followed him to Tijuana the next day when he told her he wasn't happy in his marriage. She said once they were there, he got paperwork authorizing a divorce, and then they got married after having several margaritas.
It's like most people can barely get married one time. Yep. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It to find the person, cultivate a relationship, blah, blah, blah.
No.
Make a lifetime commitment. Other people are getting on their 78th marriage at this point. How
especially
can that
men
happen?
Especially wow men. I'm forever just mystified. Like, I have a friend, I have a male friend in town. He is a mess. He's a mess, you guys. Like, mm-hmm. So many things. Sweet guy, but mm-hmm no job. You know, all the things.
Right.
This guy cannot beat the women off with a stick fast enough. It's constant. He's constantly texting me or messaging me like, well, my ex from high school just came, you know, just constant parade of women. And meanwhile, my gorgeous, hilarious, successful, etc. female friends are single in their 40s. And it is, I can't begin to wrap my mind around it.
No. Well, especially in this, like in this story in the 60s and 70s, and he's targeting young unwed mothers. And so I do understand that part of that, it plays a role that he's targeting vulnerable women.
Yes. But I don't even know that would have mattered, honestly. You know, he's good looking. He's super smart. I think he presents like somebody who's got their shit together because he's a narcissist. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really good at charming you.
Yeah.
It's the whole game. So after they had a margarita wedding, so she found out he was cheating on her soon after that. And when she confronted him, he said that when his first wife had died while drowning, he could have saved her, but chose not to.
You don't say that part out loud.
He's like, remember my first wife died? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, well, it wasn't entirely an accident. Wink, wink. Get it? So she asked him to leave and he got very angry. So she went to take a shower to let him cool off. Okay. This is not victim blaming because I love a shower and you get a hit of dopamine and it's good to give space. But just go to the beach, go to the bar. Don't go to the shower. Don't go to an enclosed space where you're naked and vulnerable.
When your husband has just told you that he murdered his first wife.
So he then broke into the shower and started to strangle her, but she was able to scream for her brother who came to save her.
Thank God.
Felix left and she learned she was pregnant soon after, but the baby did not survive to term. This guy is also very potent.
Yeah.
So Felix Vail, who is this motherfucker? Let's talk about him for one second.
Gross.
He grew up on a dairy farm in Montpelier, Mississippi, and it doesn't sound like there was much of his life where he wasn't getting in trouble for manipulating the people in his life. He learned to hide from his mother at a very young age and would wander off for hours at a time, sometimes overnight. He said he liked to test the, quote, non-sexual boundaries of girls his age.
Yeah.
Until his mother caught on and yelled at him for being mean to them.
Good.
Quote, I just crumbled, he said. I just wanted to die.
Oh.
It was the only time in my life. It wasn't a wrong thing until she told it was wrong.
What?
He said, damn ego, my mother. She totally polluted her son with ego and lies.
What?
So
because she told him to stop?
Basically, it was like him trying to be deep. Like something's not wrong until you become aware that it is. And then as soon as she implanted that in him, he wanted to die because he couldn't do his fun thing anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Some fucked up shit.
Yeah. What? Yep.
Wow.
He was a very good student and was good at just about anything he put his mind to, but got in trouble frequently. Quick trigger warning for animal cruelty. At one point, when he learned the family wouldn't be keeping all of the kittens in a litter that his cat had given birth to, he rounded them up and shot them.
Wow.
But when an evangelical preacher came to his town, he announced that he felt called to become a preacher when he was a teenager and started giving sermons at his church. He said he felt a, quote, infinitely greater power, which he compared to sticking his finger in a light socket. I started getting electrical rushes and thrills and tingles and sweat popping out. He later wrote that he saw a being that day, quote, shimmering like a moon-sized sun with infinite energy radiating out from it in all directions at once. Suddenly, he said he knew the deepest thoughts of his parishioners, quote, I knew who was screwing who, and that was the end of his career as a preacher. I didn't include this because I couldn't fully understand it, but he later, I know he told his brother Ronnie that that creature was actually a demon. And I couldn't, he said it touched, the way it was written, it sounded like he said it had touched Ronnie, his brother, but I think he was saying it had touched him. Like he got possessed while he was preaching. After high school, he wanted to become a pilot in the military and scored extremely well on the entrance exam, but was denied because, according to him, quote, they said I was not the kind of person who would be able to follow orders and that I would be a disciplinary problem.
Yeah,
good job, military. That, right? Dodge that damn bullet. After he was rejected by the military, he got a job at an oil refinery that paid him very well. So he bought himself multiple cars, a motorcycle, and a boat, and, quote, dated about 20 women.
And married 25 of them.
Yes. Married 72 of those 20 women. So if you'll remember from last week, after Felix's third woman that he killed, but 72nd wife, Annette, disappeared, he'd claimed she'd taken a bus to Mexico with $50,000. Remember all of that?
Yes.
Annette's mother, Rose, decided to dedicate her life to trying to get justice for her daughter's disappearance and likely murder.
And they didn't have kids, but she had an abortion.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yes, because he never wanted kids. Yes.
And then she regretted it. She felt like it took away her want of children.
Yes, at least. Yeah, I remember she was like 16. So
yes,
she was also very young. But yeah, Felix very much did not want children. So Rose started by meeting with Felix's sister, who revealed that Felix's first wife had died in a boating accident and girlfriend Sherrod had vanished. And so Rose was able to reach out to a detective named Terry Newell, who helped her track down Sharon's mother's information. Quote, when Rose dialed the Hensley family, Sharon's mother, Peggy, answered.
Okay, real quick. So the first wife, Bill's mom, her name is?
Mary.
And so this is her mother?
This is Sharon, the girlfriend. So it was Mary first, then Sharon disappeared.
Right.
Mary and so died. They have her body. Yeah, Sharon just disappeared. And so this is Sharon's mother, Peggy.
And then Rose is whose mom?
Annette. Yes.
Who went missing in Mexico.
Correct.
Missing in Mexico, using finger quotes.
Bingo.
Got it. Okay.
So Peggy answered, quote, do you happen to know who Felix Vail is? Rose asked. You bet I do, she responded. Well, we need to talk. Terry Newell also put Rose in touch with the FBI, who spoke with an agent named Jim Bell, who promised to work on her case in between major serial killer cases he was assigned.
Ooh.
Felix's son Bill agreed to testify against his father.
Fuck yes.
Quote, they asked, did I believe he may have murdered Annette? Bill said, and I said, yes, I believe based on past experiences, it was entirely possible.
And which girlfriend was it that he knew well, Bill?
Sharon was the one that was eating grapes and they were traveling around. Yeah, by the time Annette came around, he was long gone.
But he
was raised by Mary and then Sharon.
And then there were some other girlfriends that got away who were with Bill, but didn't get killed.
Correct. Okay. He explained his complicated feelings about his father to Rose. Quote, Felix is a mixture of opposite extremes. He is capable of incredibly unselfish love, and simultaneously he is capable of doing the incredibly selfish and black things he has done. Mm. He values, even demands, honesty and integrity, yet he admittedly will lie whenever it is convenient. Rose managed to get the Tulsa and Lake Charles police to open Mary's and Sharon's cases to investigate Felix as a suspected serial killer. Mm-hmm. Agent Bell suggested they gather all of the families to discuss the case, but just as things were starting to really gain momentum, Bell left the FBI and the cases grew cold once again.
No. Come back, FBI.
Bell,
come
back. No. During this time, Felix had been living with his parents on the dairy farm for a few years, where he would work on his car, hang upside down in the barn in his gravity boots, mm-mm, and was having multiple affairs with the women in town when their husbands were gone.
God, this is like a Coen Brothers movie.
So true.
Right?
Yes.
Like, really? They could... Okay, Coen Brothers, are you listening?
Seriously. Just imagining this fucking ding-dong hanging upside down in his parents' barn in his gravity boots.
Yes. Yes. All of it. Grapes in the bathtub. Like, yeah. This really needs to be made into a movie.
Yeah.
It's so fucked up.
He said about the affairs, quote, "We were amping each other's electric in a way we were both desperately need right now in our lives."
Wait, whose electric is he amping?
The women he was having affairs with. Amping their electric.
No, I'd stay away from my electric.
That's a good time to throw one of the soft objects I had you collect at the beginning of this episode. Yeah. But it gets way worse, so don't pitch all your pitching objects too quickly.
Don't use all my arm strength yet.
No. In 1992, Robin Sinclair, so old girlfriend who had their daughter Simone. I don't know if you remember her. This is so many wives and girlfriends ago. So she got in touch with him to remind him that he had a daughter that he'd never met. And when he arrived to meet her a few months later, Robin said, quote, "I realized that he was a fraud, bum, and kind of a joke." Thank God. Because in between they had corresponded and he was like, "I never forgot about you." And she's married, you know, and happy and stuff. But of course it's like, oh, is he the one that got away? And then he showed up and she was like, "Ha ha ha, no." Gross, dude.
Dodged so many bullets.
I'm sure he was like, "Is there anywhere I could just screw my boots into the ceiling?"
Have you ever heard of Welch's?
I gotta get a boot session. I gotta dangle twice a day or I'm just not right. Can we cover this house in plastic? Because I'm allergic to everything.
Oh, God.
So Annette's mother, Rose, moved to Western Massachusetts to start a new life and tried to heal from her grief and disappointment after the cases fell apart again.
Yeah.
Bill graduated from Mississippi State with honors and became a mechanical engineer for oil companies.
Bill.
And he was active in his local church and Boy Scouts groups.
Bill.
He married a woman named Janet in 1984, and he kept in touch with Felix. Felix wrote to Bill and said that he and his half-sister should split his belongings after his death, and, quote, "I love you both equally with all the heart I have," which is...
Not much. Sorry, Bill. Sorry to break it to you, buddy.
Like in the cartoons when the mice are splitting the bean to feed the whole family and they have to split off the sliver.
Slivers. Yeah.
That's Felix's heart. Bill replied in a letter, "I have always loved you. I can't help but love you." The quote continues, "But barricades remained in their relationship, the biggest of which was," quote, "the murder of my mother," he wrote. "I was so angry that you told me because there was absolutely no one I could talk to about it. I had to keep it to myself, knowing that no one would believe you had killed her based on those words, at least not in court." Mm-hmm. I love music. "I love you, but there are a few things between us that are holding me back, specifically the fact that you murdered my mother."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not to mention the LSD in my baba and the grapes that I had to fuel my growing body with.
My lack of shoes and shirts and
girlfriends.
Stability and education and, but fuck you, guess what? I became an engineer and I graduated in the top 5% of my class. So you can go fuck yourself, Dad.
Do you have any idea if he had a relationship with his maternal grandparents?
I don't actually know that answer to that question. I'm assuming so. I would assume so. So Bill was diagnosed with esophageal cancer in 2009.
No, Bill.
And he wrote to an uncle that he looked forward to being reunited with his mother.
Oh, God.
He recorded a conversation with his pastor before he passed. where he talked about his relationship with his father, quote, "Part of me loves him. He was a good father. I know that's hard to believe given what he's done. I have to keep a distance because of what he's able to do for my family's sake." When Bill died on January 3rd, 2009, Felix wrote in his journal, quote, "I feel a large empty hole in my being where his life presence has been for 47 years. He followed that up by writing about a good haircut he'd gotten.
Oh, fuck you. God.
Yep.
Bless America.
Yep. He skipped Bill's funeral.
No.
Despite the fact that he was in town.
No.
And at the funeral, they had played the recorded conversation that he'd had with his pastor about how his father killed his mother.
Oh, shit. Are you kidding?
No.
Booyah.
Booyah. And when Felix heard about this, he wrote to the pastor and asked for the recording, quote, "Bill never mentioned to me in his whole life any of the negative stuff about drugs and murder that had been put in his mind about me. He blamed his son's statements on false memories, saying, 'I have not known about it until now, and I am stunned.' As for the accusations of murder," he wrote, "I have saved several people's lives. I have never taken any."
Oh, yeah. And also, how in the world is Felix just bebopping around and his darling son dies at 47 years old?
Of esophageal cancer.
Please
horrible.
Explain
painful,
it to me.
Painful, horrible cancer. Horrible cancer. I had a friend who had it and survived it, thank God, and is doing quite well. But very, very publicly cataloged his struggles. And it's a nightmarish cancer. You can't eat. You
basically, no, it's
like, if the cancer doesn't kill you, you starve to death. It's horrible. Yeah. Why does this kid who's carried all of this suffering, and I'm sure he got the cancer because of all the stress of his father's fucking actions, you know? And I'm sure he felt like it was metaphorical because he didn't speak out, you know? It's just,
that's like awful.
Greek tragedy. But Rose never gave up. She spent the next couple of decades collecting as much evidence and information as she could on Felix and had pieced together all of the similarities in Mary's, Sharon's, and Annette's disappearances, specifically
Rose.
Sharon and Annette, because he was like, oh, they just went to the South. They went to some foreign country in the South and I gave them a bunch of money. Don't know. They got new ID cards. How convenient that two of the women in your life just had this same midlife crisis.
Right. And were willing to just go.
Yeah.
Change everything.
Everything.
So get some hot Mexican boyfriends or something.
Exactly. So Rose also teamed up with Mary's brother, Will Horton, who said he was devastated to learn there had been two other women. And he worked with Rose to gather as much information as he could on his sister's death. Rose got in touch with journalist Jerry Mitchell, who wrote this article that I took all this from, after she heard him on Democracy Now! And convinced him that she had a real story that needed to be told and needed to be looked into. And he brought Mary's autopsy to a renowned pathologist who confirmed it was very unlikely Mary had died of an accidental drowning because, quote, "The report showed large bruises with bleeding into tissues on the left side of her neck, which," he said, "suggested she suffered forceful neck trauma before entering the water." Mm-hmm. There were also hemorrhagic bruising to the right calf and left leg above the knee, which he said were consistent with the struggle before her submersion. Most convincingly of all was the scarf authorities had found around her neck that extended 4 inches into her mouth.
Oh, my God.
Which suggested traumatic asphyxia before entering the water. He said, quote, "Somebody had to push that scarf into her mouth. She had to have that scarf wedged in her mouth before she went into the water."
Ooh, this could all be done.
Well, I'll tell you why it didn't get done. I'll tell you why. It's not the police's fault for this case.
Wow.
Well, not the main police, just the big daddy police.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So Mary's brother, Will, had also been in touch with one of the detectives that had worked his sister's case, who said that, quote, Felix's story just didn't add up. The fishing tackle was dry. The trot line was dry. The boat was dry. Even Felix's cigarettes were dry, despite him telling the deputies he dove straight into the water to save Mary. Mm-mm. Felix was also known to water ski, but no one had ever known him to fish. And the boat wasn't at all outfitted for fishing. He'd never gone fishing, ever.
The boat was dry.
And the boat was dry. And he didn't have a trawling motor, nothing. And they were like, he didn't fish. And also, he didn't fish because he didn't use this fishing equipment. It was dry, bone dry. On May 14th, 2012, Jerry Mitchell and Rose went to the trailer that Felix had been living in Montpelier, Mississippi. It had also been hit by a tornado with him in it. And he had survived. Wow. The trailer was just like barely standing. I'm like, this
please,
guy.
Please, take him out.
I don't know what kind of deal with the devil, but he just chilling in his trailer and got ripped apart. And he's like fucking Lieutenant Dan at the tornado. Like, is that all you got?
No.
Yeah.
No.
This guy's the devil. And when they got there, he wasn't home, but they found a stack of machetes and swords inside that they wondered if they could test for DNA or blood.
Yeah. Probably could.
As they were leaving the property, Felix's sister Kay approached them and mentioned that her nephew Bill had left behind a recording claiming his father had killed his mother. Mm-hmm. They were like, can you think we can get our hands on that? And she was like, yes, as a matter of fact. 2 weeks after that, Felix sold his property and disappeared. A friend of Felix's reached out to Jerry Mitchell, the journalist, and said that he'd clearly remembered a conversation they'd had soon after Mary had died, in which he referred to her as his ex-wife, which he thought was strange. And he said that the more Felix talked about Mary, the angrier he got. And so I, you know, imagine you're talking to a buddy about his recently deceased wife who died right in front of him of drowning out of the boat that you're in. And he starts to get angry as he
feels. So Felix was getting angry.
Yes,
he talked about his wife who's dead.
Yes. He claimed that Felix referred, quote, to Mary as a bitch, saying that she thought another child would help solve their marriage problems. He quoted Vale as saying, quote, she wanted to have another kid. I didn't want the one I got. I fixed that sorry bitch. She will never have another one.
Holy shit.
Yep.
You don't say that part out loud, Felix.
Or please do.
Or you do because you get away with it anyway. Holy shit.
When Jerry Mitchell dug deeper into why Felix had never been tried for Mary's death, because remember, he did get arrested for it.
Right.
They were like, this is suspicious. And the insurance never paid out because they were like, no way, dude.
Yeah.
He found out that the DA at the time, Frank Salter Jr., had the judge at the time dismiss 882 criminal cases in 1962.
Oh, that's a lot.
A lot. Including
he just
Felix's.
Was like too busy. He's just busy. Like,
no, I'll tell you why.
Other stuff.
I'll tell you why. The detectives at the time said that Frank Salter had refused to let them present the evidence they had against Felix. And so he'd remained free to kill at least two more times. Mm-hmm. And why did he dismiss so many cases? Because it was easy money to accept bribes from the accused, and so he did. Frank Salter's father had also worked with and had been close friends with Felix's uncle, and so the rest is history.
Holy shit.
Yep.
It's just that easy.
It's just that fucking easy.
Oh my God.
So in 2012, after Felix disappeared, Jerry Mitchell published an article outlining everything he knew up to that point, and he received a call from a man who claimed that Felix was living in Canyon Lake, Texas, and had his P.O. box number.
What year?
2012.
Oh, wow.
The year I met my wife. So yeah. We're fast forward very many decades.
Yeah.
The article also got the attention of the acting chief of the FBI unit that specializes in serial homicide investigations, and an agent from that department was able to track down Felix's new address in Texas. Then on January 18th, 2013, that agent traveled to the address and found Felix living in a shed on that property and took him into custody. Felix refused to talk about any of the accusations against him and instead claimed that all of the women's families were lying. The agent said that Felix smirked the entire time he was questioned, which made the agent mad enough to work on his case days, nights, and weekends.
Just to get him.
Until he found a major break. This is the only reason I would be a good detective, because I would rage work. I would rage break it.
Yeah.
I do revenge success. Like if somebody wrongs me, I will become successful out of spite. I would just smirk at me and your ass is going to jail for the rest of your life, because I will frame you if I have to, because I'm so... Oh, I hate bullies. So he found a major break. He worked on this. He rage worked on this case until he found a man named Isaac Absher Jr. who had worked with Felix. And Isaac Absher Jr. is like 400 years old at this point.
Right.
He's the oldest man on the planet. He had worked with Felix when he'd first started dating Mary. And Felix had rented a room from him as well. Felix lived with him until he married Mary, and Isaac said he felt like Mary's big brother. Wow. They were very close. He said she was such a sweet girl. He said that after Felix got married, his mood at work became dark, and, quote, he talked about how ugly his wife was when she was pregnant and that he didn't like his baby.
Gross.
Even a dog loves their children, Isaac said, was his reply.
Yeah.
Isaac said that two nights before Mary's death, they'd visited him, and Mary had asked him in confidence if he thought Felix could take Bill from her.
Well,
after her death, Isaac had joined the crew that dragged the river for Mary's body, and he had been there when they'd found her. Quote, her body was rigid, and a scarf was wrapped around her neck before going into her mouth. It had a big old knot in it. The deputies on the boat boiled in anger. This is still the quote. All voicing the same opinion that Vail had killed Mary. They believed it was foul play. A deputy shared the copies of those photographs taken that day, and Absher had held on to them ever since, placing them in a folder he marked keep. He'd held on to the photos for 50 years.
Amazing.
And get this, Aaron Brockovich shit. He also had the 1962 sheriff's report that outlined the 15 reasons why deputies believed Felix had killed Mary.
National treasure hero.
Aaron Brockovich, too. The Isaac Absher story, because chills. I have chills in my jowls. I'm so chilled out by this guy. Keep. Just wrote keep.
Keep.
And I'm important. In a like safety deposit box. Just
do not bend.
Yes. Oh, I love you, Isaac. I love you, Isaac.
Did it.
I love you, Gary Mitchell. I love you,
that
Rose.
That never happened.
I love
Can you,
Bill.
Like, imagine the detectives. He's like, just here's my keep folder.
No.
Shoop. Here's all the things that you can't find that you need.
And you just start like weeping blood because you're so overwhelmed with relief and excitement.
That's amazing.
It makes me want to watch Aaron Brockovich right now. I will watch that whole movie just for that creepy movie. Guy to give her the papers, and then just for her to tell that lady that she's going to get $4 million, and the lady cries, and then I cry, and everyone cries.
And then
when
Aaron gets a big fat check.
And then we find out that Aaron Brockovich's lawyer is a big fat scumbag who like stole from airplane victims and shit. Fuck him. But yeah, Aaron Brockovich.
The movie version, we can just live in that memory.
Yes. And in this version, this shit worked, because Jerry Mitchell also learned that the land Felix was living on had been given to him by a man named David Thomason, whose wife Kathy had mysteriously drowned in a lake on July 3rd, 2005.
Oh, shit.
Kathy had been trying to leave Thomason after he'd repeatedly assaulted her, and then she mysteriously fell out of a boat, and Thomason collected more than $250,000 in life insurance.
Weird. That's surprising.
Sometime after that, his house burned down, and he got another $200,000.
Huh.
I wonder
if guy's got bad luck.
I wonder if Felix Vail had anything to do with this. And then Thomason was like, here's the deed to the land, Felix. For no reason, because you're a good friend.
Yeah.
So in March of 2013, Jerry Mitchell received an email from a PI named Gina Frenzel, who offered him her services and said she believed she could get Felix to talk. He was like, no way. And she's like, watch me work.
So I'll stroke the little baby ego until he tells me everything we need to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was like, I read your article. I want to help. And he's like, I don't know what you can do. And she's like, I'll figure it out. So I swear to God.
Leave it to me.
So she reached out to Felix to say she was investigating the fire that had destroyed Thomason's house. And he had, quote, spoken almost nonstop to her when they met.
Oh, boy.
Quote, he claimed to have a genius level IQ surpassing 140 and talked of memories from the womb, saying he could feel the sunshine on his mother's belly, among other things. Go ahead and throw something.
Yeah, I did. And he's like, what, 70 years old at this point?
Yes, he was. Yes, exactly. He was in his 70s.
Still pulling this bullshit?
Yep. And Gina was, I want to say in her 40s, you know, significantly younger. You'll be so surprised to hear. Gina started to play into Felix's ego and played the role of his emotional girlfriend to get him to talk even more. She said they never even kissed, but she just was like, yep, I'm your girlfriend. Let's go. And he fell for it.
Two can play this game.
Exactly. Quote, he talked about how much he knew about killing people, murdering, pain, incapacitating people. He said that he and Thomason had, quote, enough autonomy that we are held in suspicion by all of our family and friends for being able to think of something and do it without looking at whether it's legal or not or permissible by society or not. So he and Thomason had started a little creepy fucking Lake and Ing style, like cult of two, where they just, if it's permissible by society, like what is murder? It's only not permissible because society pays attention to it. Or, you know, like, ugh, shut the fuck up. He talked of eating, quote, live raw meat, saying if you're going to eat animals, you would have to kill them and drink the blood, suck it out of the body and drink it right then. Then that would be live meat. Ugh. Shut
Gross.
Up.
Yeah. You're terrible.
On April 30th, Felix left Texas. He was like, "Woo, the heat is on. I got to go." And he went to where his brother Ronnie had lived in Mississippi. Ronnie had died 5 weeks before, and when Ronnie's widow saw Felix approaching her home, she called police and said she didn't want to talk to him.
Like, we all have family members that you would like to do that for, you know, like you come in, you call the police just because you don't want to be bothered. But
and your husband died 5 days ago and you're like, the last thing I need is his weird brother shit right now, his weird murder brother shit.
No.
And Felix hadn't gone to the funeral. He just shows up and starts creeping around.
Yeah, because he didn't need anything until he needed something.
Exactly.
And now here he comes to ruin her life.
Yes. Later that day, Felix returned to her home and neighbors saw him looking into her mailbox and then jumping over her fence so he could look inside her home.
Stop.
Felix disappeared again, but Gina called Jerry Mitchell later that night and said that she'd had someone analyze some photos she'd been able to capture of the back sides of some of the pages of his journals. So he's like, let me read to you from my journal. And as he's going, she's like, kazink, kazink, kazink.
And so many heroes.
So many heroes. And through these pages, they were able to make out the words wife, attic, and divided. And detectives wondered if Felix had gone to his brother's house to find something his brother had that he wanted. Ronnie's widows gave the police permission to search her home, but they found nothing. And I don't think I included this, so I'll just say it now. So he sold the house. He still owned a fucking house in Tulsa that he stole from Annette's mother.
Oh, wow.
So like he sold 7, it.
7,000 years ago.
Yeah. So that he could continue to be on the lam. He sold it. Mm-hmm. And the new people who bought it actually found a box of Annette's stuff in the attic, including her birth control pills and like a bag that had been packed to go to someplace warm.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was probably what he had been referring to when he said wife, attic, and divided.
Right.
So 6 days later, Felix reached out to Gina and told her he was back in Canyon Lake, Texas. That time, police were able to intercept him in time and arrested him and charged him with the murder of his first wife, Mary.
Wow, that's some amazing work.
Big time. He wrote to Gina from jail and gave his explanation of what he claimed happened to Mary that night. And of course, it contradicted the original statement he'd given to police and like every other person in the history of time. He gave Gina permission to go to his home, where she photographed all of his journals over 16 hours. He found Annette's birth certificate and quick trigger warning for child sexual abuse. He found a photo of a naked 3-year-old, she did, who claimed as an adult that Felix had stalked her for years.
Oh, God. And so is he still thinking that Jeanette's his emotional girlfriend?
Gina, yes. Yeah, he was like, I love you and thank you for standing by me. And yes, if you need to have access to my home to protect me or whatever. She's like, cool, thanks. Kazink, 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 kazink. 16 hours of fucking flipping these pages, rolling your eyes and shooting. Okay, here's the final, get all the things that you want to throw together because here we go.
Use up all our strength now.
Yep. In his journals, he wrote that his philosophy on life was to, quote, kill and eat, restrain, redirect, release, burn, plow, nurture and explore, be sexual, be gentle, be forceful, inquire and instruct and do it all with joy and love. In an April 3rd, 1991 entry, he wrote, quote, wanting some to forgive all egos for pain they've caused me and each other and a parallel desire to see them blink out with or without remorse. The only thing that will erase some of the pain is to know that each person, in parentheses, ego, will not cause its particular kind of pain to me or anyone else again. So basically, it's okay to kill people if they hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
Or got fat when they were pregnant. In an October 17th, 2005 journal entry, he wrote of a dream, quote, I was in bed with a woman and I was looking at an incredible assortment of knives and wondering if the knives were for cutting up large animals or even humans. In March 27th, 1986, he described a woman and her daughters visiting him in his home, quote, the little girls were delicious, he wrote. We massaged some, hugged and kissed some, and it was midnight and time for them to go.
No.
August 29th, 1992, he walked into a Walmart and said, quote, a 1-year-old white girl looked in my eyes, loving me like there was no age difference between us. Hey, big surprise. The guy was also a full-blown pedophile, you guys. Yay. Bonus. This guy was a pedophile. I mean, probably gleaned that by the fact that he married a 16-year-old that he started dating when she was like 15, but...
Yeah.
At a strip club that night, he wrote of seeing, quote, the most beautiful white 21-year-old female in just a G-string that I have seen maybe in my whole life. I'm assuming he meant the most beautiful he had seen.
Right.
Since sex is not a consideration, I think I may have been looking in her eyes, some like the 1-year-old was mine today.
No.
Yeah. Yep.
That's so fucking creepy.
So creepy. Jerry Mitchell was able to track down multiple people who Felix had confessed to killing his wife to over the years, as well as piles of evidence on the woman who'd gone missing after they'd met him. And his murder trial began on April 8th, 2016 in Lake Charles, Louisiana. And in the end, it took the jurors, guess how long?
15 seconds.
Less than a half of an hour.
That has got to be the fastest time in the world. Like, it's a world record.
Like, cackled when I read that. Less than half of an hour. And the prosecutor said, they were like, how long does this usually take? He's like, a case like this, a couple hours. And then they were like, hadn't even gone, you know, to get a smoke. And they're like, okay, jury's in.
Seriously. Yes. The jury... probably went to pee.
Yep.
Gathered. All of them were guilty, 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 guilty.
Yep.
Goodbye.
Yep.
Done. Let's go.
Yes.
Home.
Yep.
Wow.
And the article that Jerry Mitchell wrote, if you want to read about all of the conversations he had with all of the people that had ever known Felix that he was able to track down, it's all in the article. So if you're not convinced, guys, if you're not convinced, I couldn't. I mean, it's endless. He was found guilty of second-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison, making it the oldest conviction of a serial killer case in the United States history and one of the oldest solved cold cases.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. Annette's mother, Mary Rose, called the guilty verdict, quote, a prayer answered, a dream come true, that someday justice would be done and that Felix Vail would be held accountable for these three beautiful young lives that he took.
She was still alive.
She's still alive.
Wow.
Will Horton, Mary's brother, praised the district attorney's office, Rose, and private investigator Gina Frenzel. He spoke of his love for his sister and his late nephew, Bill. Bill's widow, Janet, reminisced about her late husband, quote, "In 1970, a little boy walked a long distance to tell everyone that his dad murdered his mom. He felt like no one heard. Today he was heard. Poor Bill.
Bill."
Police suspect that three women in Felix's life weren't, that the three women in Felix's life weren't his only victims. And there is evidence of others, including a man Bill claimed his father had bragged about killing in Mexico. A black woman, turns out, also, shock of all shocks, Felix was super racist.
Yeah.
There was a black woman Bill said Felix kept a picture of who was, quote, face down inside of a box. And he couldn't tell if she was alive or not. And a black man he'd claimed he had hit and killed in Mississippi, as well as others. He had also been accused of molesting children, but was never caught or convicted.
God.
Rose said later, quote, she had long regretted some decisions she'd made with Annette and wanted to be able to forgive herself. My other dream is to forgive Felix. I know it's going to be hard. It will be hard. And sometimes it's even harder to forgive ourselves. She said she feels lighter now, involved in her first serious relationship to moving to Massachusetts. She said peace of mind made that possible. More than anything, she said she is ready to step toward a new future. Quote, I'm just praying for guidance to know where I can spend my energy for the rest of this lifetime and way to serve the greater good.
Oh, Rose.
And that, my angels, is the wildly horrible and redemptive case of the American monster times a million, Felix Vail.
Wow. Excellent, excellent, excellent job. That sucks.
Thank you, Reddit. I did not know what I was embarking upon.
Right.
I honestly don't even know how I found this case or, you know, how Reddit goes.
Just right.
Cruising along.
They
and the
give
next
you a
thing
name.
You know, you're like locked into this giant, enormous article, the longest article you've ever read.
Wow.
Also, Jerry Mitchell writes for the Clarion Ledger, which is in Mississippi. And I was like, well, maybe they just reprinted it. And so I did some more research on him because I was like, well, surely he works for the New York Times. No.
No,
homie just locked into the Clarion Ledger and just writes these like Pulitzer. I don't think it won a Pulitzer, but it should.
It should.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. He also needs to write a book about it. And then the Coen brothers need to buy the rights to the book and make a movie.
Couldn't agree more.
Because that's some crazy ass shit.
Could not agree more.
Wow.
But it's like so, Felix is so insufferable that it would be like the Garden State of serial killer movies. You know what I mean? Be like, oh, give me a break. Oh, we're just eating grapes. You're like, what a stupid, weak-ass plot point. That's so quirky. Gross, guys.
They're like, but no, really. That's no. Really what he did.
I would put it in asterisks at the bottom of the screen. For real, this guy really did this. I didn't just make this up to be quirky, I promise.
Oh, man. Well, seriously, good one.
Thank you.
What a crazy story.
It's so crazy. And I, even as I was finishing it, I was like, God, what? No.
Yeah.
And it kind of becomes one of those things too. It's a blessing and a curse to have that much information available because it becomes impossible to know what to include and what to exclude, you know? But I got to a point where I was like, okay, I think it's clear that this guy did it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I think we have a pretty clear picture. I don't need to include every single interview, but they are out there. So if you want to read them, go for it. And more details just about his journals. And I mean, you know, it's just so much fuckery.
No.
Decades of it. Decades, a whole lifetime. This guy had the best life. And that pisses me off so much. He was like traveled the world, traveled the country, like just lived off of these poor women, just sucked them dry and his children and the children he abused and stalked and ugh. There's a hurricane of horrible.
I saw a TikTok the other day talking about, it's like a hospice nurse, and she talks a lot about the experience of watching people die and how it's pretty clear to her that before actual physical death happens, the soul basically leaves the body.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody was asking her about, what about bad people? Like people who've done really bad things. And she said that, usually she doesn't really know the history and doesn't want to know what people have done. But she was called to a hospital to offer hospice care to an inmate who was dying. Mm. And she didn't know what he did, but he still had an active guard guarding him.
Wow.
And so she knew whatever it was really, really bad. And she said that his soul never left. So he had to basically suffer the death, the physical death that she thinks most people are
released from.
Released from, O-M-G. Yes. She said, you know, I don't really believe in heaven or hell, but I do believe in karma. Mm-hmm. And that some people maybe have to stay in their bodies.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I was like, whoa.
God.
Yeah, because I don't either. I don't believe in eternal hell by any means. But somebody like Felix, like, it's hard not to want revenge. It's hard not to want him to suffer after living a full life. Prison for him right now is not enough.
No.
And
Yeah.
No, well, that's terrible.
I just have to assume, and I'm sure I've told this story before. I'm sure of it. It's probably been a while. It was one day I was crossing the street in California or Portland, out west somewhere. And the stoplight idling in front of me was a like Guy Fieri looking guy in a yellow Xterra. I don't even remember if anyone remembers that car. Mm-hmm. Banana yellow Xterra with the top down off. Mm-hmm. Oakley sunglasses, like the most horrendous house music pumping at the most extreme volume. And the guy was just chilling and looked so peaceful. He looked so happy. Just not a care in the world. Just most ostentatious, obnoxious American bro you could imagine. And I was like, your soul is at the end. You know?
You have completed.
You have complete. You are work. So evolved that you get to be a white American bro driving an Xterra. You have suffered. You have been the one who causes suffering. And now you just get to be that. And then you get to go to Nirvana or whatever. Right? It's, or you're brand new. I'm going to assume that that's the end, right? That you just suffer, you cause suffering, you go back and forth until your soul has completed all of their missions, and then you just get a banana yellow Xterra.
Or you get to be a well-loved and taken care of dog.
They're not even souls. I just am not convinced that like dogs even exist on the same plane as we do, you know, in the same reality. I feel like there's just like a split in our timeline and then like heaven or something, and they just are coming through as holographs. You know,
they just and I really I've thought sense. About it. Yeah, I feel like sure we got everything else fucked up, like all of the other fucked up shit.
Yeah,
but we got to have dogs.
Yeah,
and maybe the other timelines are running smoother, but they don't get dogs. And I honestly, I think I'd probably stick around for the dogs.
I'd take dogs.
I love them.
Has
so
anyone
much.
Ever had a sociopathic dog that's like really trying to hurt you? Not because of anger or trauma, right? Like just a dog that's like, right. Like
no, I've had
around.
Some fucking bad dogs.
Some bad dogs.
Yeah,
I have a scar on my eyelid because my dog bit it in half.
But that was, I still love him so much.
User error. It was not doggy fault. That was me fault. But for real, has anyone had a dog that's just like standing over your bed with a knife in the night and just, you know? No.
Ready to murder. No.
Trying to think.
Not you.
I've definitely met biting dogs, angry dogs, scared dogs, but that's all scared and fear. That's not like
malicious.
Sociopaths.
No.
Dogs are the best. And you all are the best. And
you
okay,
are the best.
I promised extra Patreon this week. Oh, here's what I'm thinking. We don't have time to do Patreon shout outs this mm-hmm. week, but I think it's time to have a Patreon party.
Yes.
So Sadie and I will put our brains together, our date brains and number brains together, and come up with a date. But it's time to hang out with you all. So if you want to get in on that, sign up for our Patreon in the next month, and we will announce those dates. Probably May would be my guess. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the best time. And you can sign up for as little as $5 a month, and you get like 200 whole ass, full ass other episodes. A lot of them are my favorite episodes I've ever put out. And some of Sadie's are the favorites I've ever heard her put out. So it's good shit. It's not just the, you know, scraps that we couldn't put on the main feed. It's good. Good.
No, we just did an alien abduction one, which was so funny. And nobody got murdered. And
no, yeah. There's
really,
weird.
We it's do kind of spooky.
Exactly. Occasionally, not all the time, but occasionally we do just off weird woo woo shit, and it's really fun.
Yeah.
So get over there and do that if you want to, and you can also hang out with us on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at They Will Kill. You can go to our website, theywillkill.com, and you can always email us at theywillkillpodcast@gmail.com.
You can rate and review and subscribe to us, please.
Yes, please. And be nice.
And be nice if you can. That helps.
That really helps.
And thank you, AJ Bergans, for your music.
Thank you so much.
And remember,
well, after all the heavy, deep stuff we went into, the only thing that I took away this week is that we should all be making side tables for a living, because every time I'm currently in the market for side tables. And every time I'm in the market for side tables, I realize just how motherfucking expensive and unavailable they are. And I don't
always very cute.
No, they're usually garbage. Oh. And mm-hmm. I don't know, because I know I could make a side table, right? It's probably mm-hmm. the simplest piece of furniture available. Coffee tables, cheap, abundant. Like, what is this fucking De Beers ass scarcity of side tables?
Right.
And why are they so expensive?
I don't know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And why are we not all manufacturing side tables? Because they are the most precious resource on the planet. If you right now are like, I wouldn't know what to do with my life, here's the answer. Side tables. Guys.
Make them cute. Make them.
Yes. Sturdy.
Sturdy and like.
And make them not thousands of billions of dollars a piece. Yeah. Or you can. It doesn't matter. I'll still buy them because they are so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Do it.
Elon Musk's parents have a big cave full of side tables somewhere that they put there in their 20s or whatever. And so now we just think side tables are expensive, but they're not. They shouldn't be. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, you know, two sides and a top. Come on.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1. You
know, four legs and a top. Or you could just do two sides. You could do two solid sides and a top. Nail, 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 nail. Done. What? Why? Why is that $75 a piece? Make it make sense. Minimum. Minimum set, $150. Sadie's children could put that together.
They probably have.
Yes. We've all done industrial arts or whatever, shop class.
Yes.
Yes. I can make
look at you, industrial arts.
I can make them with my eyes closed. And why am I consistently paying $150 for a set? Minimum.
I made a plant stand. I wonder where that ended up.
I made a bench.
I meant a storage bench. Yeah, plant stand. That was kind of, I remember being really proud of it.
Remember they also had that piggy bank? They had a plastic mold.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why our school got this rich plastic mold, but we made piggy banks with plastic pellets. I
forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yes, that was cool.
It was cool. No skills involved. Just cool. Just fun.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Thanks, Mr. Edwards.
I was just going to say, thank you, Mr. Edwards. You're a good guy.
Can I remember my own last name? No. Nope.
Nope.
Can I remember my industrial arts teacher in high school?
Yep.
Heck yeah.
I remember him looking like Bull from Night Court, too.
Yes.
With his little pencil pocket protector.
Yep. And his wife was the computer teacher.
Yeah. She was the baddie. We had to take our print screen. We used to have there used to be a key on the computer keyboard that was print screen. For whatever reason, someone thought everyone's just going to need to print their screen constantly. And we had ours removed from my class because somebody pushed it like hundreds of times and it just print screened all day long, all day long, all day long. So we didn't have them anymore. They just took the key off, but there's still a little nub underneath.
So you could totally push it.
I don't know if Mr. Edwards probably came in and made a little guard or something, you know.
With his plastic mold.
Yeah, with his industrial arts skills. We also learned drafting. Like, I thought I got such a shitty education. I know how to draft with a pencil and a slide rule and shit. Graph paper. You know?
Oh, shit.
Like, yeah. I made a dragon stuffed animal, you know? Like, I know how to do skills.
I learned how to make manicotti. And pigs in a blanket.
We have skills. We learn skills. And how to make a plastic pig bank. Side tables, can't. Gotta buy those for $150. But
I learned not to chew tobacco because the teachers would make the students swallow it.
God, that is felony child abuse, if you ask me.
Oh, we love, right, you, we love so you so much. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you real soon.
We love you.
We love you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Way to serve.
I got you a cheese snack.
Thanks. Okay, I'm almost done.
I just came up here to give you the cheese snack.
That's so nice. I love cheese snacks. Okay. Okay. I should be done in like 15 minutes at the most.
Bye.
You want a bite? I don't lick it. Do you want the rest?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Love you.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.